Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right, everybody. Glad you are here. 3rd of May, final hour of the day, final hour of the week. What will we do? We got all kinds of things going on. What in the world is making that noise? There's all kinds of technology going nuts. You can tell it's you can tell it's the end of the week. It's festive, so we might as well just make it official. It's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good. I would not.
The star of the show, hardworking Mr. Dolomite, James Brown.
It is James's birthday.
Well, look here. I got to get up and do my thing. Okay, well, let me kind of move these things around here, you know. Let me get up and do my thing, you understand? Can I really get into it?
Yeah.
Can I get into the thing, really?
Yeah.
Like a sex machine?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Moving?
Yeah.
Doing it?
Here we go.
Can I get into it?
Yeah.
Can
oh,
I
my.
Get into all our things?
Yeah.
We're ready to get into it.
Yeah.
I'm going to count it off, Jab. One, two, three, four. Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Get up. Stay on the scene.
Spring of 65. Get up. I feel like being a sex machine, part one.
Get up.
Hey, what you going to do, man?
Stay on the scene.
James's titles were sometimes as entertaining as the records themselves. I think my favorite, James Brown, born 91 years ago today, by the way. just awesome. He had at one point the longest song title that had ever made the top 40. And I don't know if Casey Kasem ever had a chance. He would have had to. Was it in the Casey Kasem era? I don't know. And now here's your long distance dedication. Here's James Brown. I can't do it as Casey. The song title was literally "Don't Want No One to Get Me Nothing. Open the Door, I'll Get It Myself." Part one. I can only imagine what part two. Happy birthday, James. All right, there we go. All right, 866-660-5759. Look, I guess I've got a final burst of Trump courtroom coverage this week, a final burst of college insanity. And again, all this stuff, a pendulum swinging back, man. People are seeing this college campus nonsense and going, those people are insane. And they know which political party aligns with them. And they're taking a look at the persecution of Trump, and they're seeing which political party is behind this, and they don't like it. So speaking of things that people did not like, let me just share. This is me, Newsweek.com, opinion section, brand new column this morning. Say what you will about the Bidens, but when their dog Commander went on a White House biting spree, they didn't walk him out on the South Lawn and blow his brains out. There are differences, one can find, between Commander, a German shepherd sent to live in a less stressful environment, and Cricket, a 14-month-old female wire hair pointer who took a bullet from South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem in a story she now shares with mysterious enthusiasm in her upcoming book. There are also differences between the scenes of the two dogs' crimes. The hardscrabble prairie of the Dakotas, where Noem delivered the harsh sentence some 20 years ago, and the modern-day White House, a building she may now never occupy as a result of all this. Political year memoirs are designed to deliver one message: look how awesome I am. And they're usually a chore to navigate, heavy with self-congratulation and pretty sparse in newsmaking revelations. In that regard, you got to hand it to the governor for sparking days of buzz ahead of the release of her book, No Going Back. Problem is, that title proves ironically prophetic as she watches her political aspirations get buried just like cricket under the weight of a stunning example of failure to read the room. The room she's pitching to is America, a country that is not buying her testimony on the gravity of cricket's sins. Now, city and suburban dog owners would do well to know that in our rural hinterlands, harsh fates sometimes await dogs who pose a danger to people or an impediment to the function of a farm or ranch environment. That said, her book doesn't exactly paint a picture of Cujo terrorizing the landscape. She describes an unfortunate hunt where Cricket not only failed to show the required disciplined attention to pheasants, but instead directed her appetites towards some neighbor's chickens on the way home. Embarrassing for Christy Noem, I'm sure, but she doesn't exactly stoke support for the death penalty by describing this pup as, quote, the picture of pure joy, going out of her mind with excitement, chasing all those birds and having the time of her life. Maybe it's me, but I don't read that passage and think, this dog has to die. Yes, Cricket did take a nip at Noem as she tried to corral those canine exuberances that day, but even that will not lead readers to nod approvingly as she concludes, quote, I hated that dog, calling her untrainable and less than worthless, dangerous to anyone she came in contact with. At that moment, she writes, I realized I had to put her down. Pause for a moment and consider not only that she did that, but that she is so proud of it that she proudly touts it 2 decades later in a book clearly designed to boost her stock for the vice presidency, if not higher. Then consider that a collection of editors and the governor's own advisors thought this would be a great thing to share in the thick of a fateful political year. It takes a special kind of blindness to miss the obvious revulsion that this would provoke across political and cultural lines. And part of the chorus of reaction has come from pockets of the hunting and ranching communities weighing in to say, yeah, look, the occasional dog might meet such a fate under the most egregious of rural circumstances, but the bar is simply not met here. Donald Trump may or may not have a lot of dog enthusiasm, but he certainly has a nose for the kind of optics disaster that should narrow his running mate list. And if Christy Noem has indeed put a metaphoric bullet through her short-term political prospects, it's not even so much for shooting the dog when she was in her 30s. It's for revealing today that she sees America as a country that would just be thrilled by this weird, badass prairie princess act. What is she thinking? Whom did she envision reading that chapter, pumping a fist and saying, yeah, we got to have her a heartbeat from the presidency? And then the doubling and tripling down have made it worse. She took to social media and cable news segments to blame the softies for failing to see this as evidence of her talent for facing painful decisions. That it should bolster her appeal to people who are, quote, looking for leaders who are authentic, willing to learn from the past, and who don't shy away from tough challenges. Wow, that's a lot. Does she think that the imagined grit that she showed in putting a bullet into Cricket is evidence of fitness for the rigors of the world stage? There are plenty of pages in Governor Noem's memoir that will properly describe the many attributes that make her a good governor and might still lead to future higher office. She has a lot of talents, and at age 52, plenty of time to get past this bump in the road. But if the Cricket chapter has derailed her for now, somewhere across the Rainbow Bridge, there's a wire hair pointer happily chasing birds and taking credit. I have to tell you, that last, I wrote that last line. I even ran it by Lisa. I said, am I being too cute here? She said, go for it. I trusted her, which I always do. So, all right. So there's that. Now, so on Dog Days of Spring, let me find this. So this is Matt Walsh now, right? Matt Walsh, a conservative's conservative. And what happened here, where did I find this? Here we go. In the history of life, you're going to see every once in a while, you'll hear stories of pit bulls just eating a baby or, you know, attacking somebody, killing them on the sidewalk. Do other breeds bite people? Blah, blah, blah. Yes. But there's just something about the pit bull. And rarely is there such graphic video of it, but Matt Walsh the other day, somebody was across the street, as a bunch of them got loose and just, they ate a guy, four or five of them. Cops or something descend on this and just speaking of shooting dogs, this one's justified, just bam, bam. I mean, it was carnage on top of carnage. And the original Matt Walsh post was, it is insane that we allow people to own pit bulls. They are dangerous beasts who do not belong in our neighborhoods. There are no good ones, just those that haven't attacked you yet. Well, there's a conversation starter. I've weighed in on this at times. I share my buddy George Dunham's belief that these are alligators with fur. But a lot of it does involve the training, and you get the kind of the dog that you train, blah, blah, blah. But there is some inbred stuff here, man, and I am not a fan. I'm also not a fan of breed-specific restrictions, necessarily. But the more I thought about this, and I know, and here come 47 of you, go, oh, Pinky never would hurt a fly, and here's a picture of him with our baby. Yeah, no. No. So Matt then follows up after hearing back from these people. He writes, I have listened to all of the arguments from the pit bull defenders, and I've realized the error of my ways. I'm sorry. Pit bulls might be disproportionately dangerous and far more likely to kill or maim than almost any other breed, but why should that stop you from bringing them into the community? Yeah, they might try to eat your neighbor's child, but that's none of your neighbor's business. Sure, there are plenty of other breeds that are much less likely to attack, and even if they do attack, are much less likely to do any significant damage. But why shouldn't you skip over all those significantly safer breeds and specifically choose the one that poses the greatest statistical risk to everyone around you, including your family and yourself? Sure, pit bulls are genetically predisposed to aggression and built to inflict maximum damage, but why should that have any impact on your decision to adopt one? Sure, the risk you take by adopting a pit bull is also a risk that you're forcing everyone around you to take as well, but why should that matter to you? I see it all clearly now. Makes so much sense. Thanks for your feedback. Matt Walsh. All righty, there you go. 923, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. All right, 9:29 on a Friday. So real quick on the Vias Can of Las Colinas text line. Oh, my goodness. My sister's took a chunk out of her daughter's arm and her husband's calf. She still has the monster. at least Mitt Romney only put his dog on the roof of his car. Oh, thank you very much. Dang, Mark, sitting in Chick-fil-A drive-thru, open the Instabook, and the first thing I see is a pit bull video. Oh, we had a... We had another instance of listen, every time I bring this up, it resonates completely, where you'll be talking about something, someone will say something, you don't even have to do a web search for it, you don't have to do an Amazon purchase for it, it can be something you just talk about. I think the scariest one is somebody told me about something they were literally just thinking about. I mean, they were thinking about either getting some medical procedure or thinking about visiting some, and I don't mean visiting Hawaii or, you know, visiting, you know, Paris or anything. That was a fairly obscure place, like they were thinking of some coastal resort in Thailand or something like that. Hadn't Googled it, hadn't asked Alexa about it, hadn't done doodly, and started getting ads about it on Facebook, like, immediately. Everything is listening. Hey, thanks for listening to us. Just be sure that you know that everything in your house is listening to you. 9:30, let's listen to Nikki Whaley in the newsroom. Four Seasons hits, man. Working my way back to you, Walk Like a Man, Ragdoll. And then they came back. Remember Who Loves You and December 1963, Oh, What a Night. Cashing some royalty checks. That guy right there, Frankie Valli, is 90 today. Look at there, look at there. All right, you know something that we're going to be able to do, and it's kind of funny, it's like a feature of the 9 o'clock hour. It, most days is Trump walking into the courtroom, because it's a campaign stop in the lobby. Yeah, the courtroom is the campaign trail. So here's 45 just a few minutes ago.
Okay, thank you very much. They've asked me to speak a little bit about the job numbers, and the job numbers just came out, and they're horrible. And they're very, and I say that not happily, I say that very unhappily. But the numbers are horrible. It's just these people are destroying our country. Here's another sign of it. So as you probably know, before I did, the job numbers came out there really, really low, really.
Just so you know, the economy added 175,000 jobs in April, way less than expected. And here's the funny thing. Who's doing these expectations? You know, who's, you know, the Biden press office? I mean, listen, if you have high expectations, you know, one of two things can happen. They are met, in which case you go, yay, look at us. Or they fall far short, in which case everybody goes, what happened? It's an old adage. That's the thing you say about pessimists. You're never disappointed.
Bad, our economy's bad, and now it's starting to show. So you'll see, and it'll only get worse. It'll only get worse. We've only gone one way with the so-called leadership. There is no leadership. But with the so-called leadership we have in this country. So that's number one. Number two is where we are now. We're in a courthouse instead of being in Georgia. We're in a courthouse instead of being in any one of, I would say, 10 states where I'd like to be right now. We have 10 states. We were already marked down. Months ago, we were marked down to be in Georgia today, where we're doing very well in the polls, by the way, but that's where we were supposed to be. We're supposed to be in Ohio tomorrow, and we're supposed to be in Florida on the next day, doing campaigning, essentially campaigning. So now I have to go through this trial day after day. The trial is, we are winning this trial. If we had a fair trial, if we had a fair judge, I don't think it would have even allowed this trial to take place. Then I would go and read the newspaper stories today, the legal experts, because they've come out with scathing reports on this trial, scathing, that it shouldn't even be taking place.
And a lot of those so-called, funny, legal expert is a curious business card. It's like constitutional lawyer. It could mean absolutely anything. But a lot of the folks who say that this case is a big box of nothing are not fans of Trump.
Reed, Greg Jarrett, Reed, Andrew McCarthy, Reed, Mark Levin, who's been so great. Reed, all of them. That's incredible. Dershowitz came out with a very strong article.
Alan Dershowitz, perfect example, a lifelong Democrat voter.
Jonathan Turley has been very, very powerful. Just came out with another article. Just read them. I don't know these people for the most part. These are legal experts, and they say this trial is a disgrace. And yesterday, Alvin Bragg sat here all afternoon long, and in the meantime, outside, you have nothing but violence going on. He's the worst DA in the country. He's spending, they must have 20 different DAs and assistant DAs in that room over the last couple of days. Over nothing, over no crime. Everyone says there was no crime. Everything was legal. And they're doing this because it's for politics. They want to get Biden elected. That's the only reason. The judge is highly conflicted. He should not be allowed to be the judge of this case. He's trying to make it as salacious as possible by allowing testimony that has nothing to do with the case. He wants to make it an isolationist case, try and hurt Trump, but it's having the opposite effect, I think. We'll see, but the poll numbers are higher than they've ever been, and that's the story. But he's trying to make it as salacious. He's allowing things in.
I think he's found a new word, and it's a good one. Salacious is precisely the perhaps he'll pivot to prurient at some point soon. That's harder to say. The Stormy Daniels thing is catnip, and the Karen McDougal stuff. It's all just catnip for the people who are involved in what is ultimately just an attempt to destroy him. Legally, destroy him financially, and destroy him reputationally in an attempt to keep him from winning in November. That's what all of this is about.
That have nothing to do with this case, nothing to do with it. And he's allowing things in, but nothing for us. He gives everything to the corrupt DA. We have a corrupt DA who's not doing his job. New York City is a violent city. It's become violent with the cashless bail. I'm the only one that has to put up bail. So I just want to tell you that the case is going fine. We have a corrupt DA. We have a corrupt judge. You shouldn't be on this case.
It's like he's asking to be put in jail. And it is the gag order. There are a couple of ways you can go when you got a gag order, and an unconstitutional, unfair, one-sided gag order. Meanwhile, Michael Cohen is making, are those TikTok videos where he's got like a little cowboy hat floating above his head with some effects filter on the, it's like, what? But anyway, if you got a judge who's trying to slap you, that said the other day. Said the other day, speaking of words that people like, that there will be an incarceratory, just fun to say, incarceratory solution if the $1,000 per infraction fines don't work. So I don't know. It may be. He may be trolling this judge a little bit. See if he'll throw him in jail overnight. Because as I've said, he throws him in jail, he wins 40 states.
That's a disgrace to America. And I'm
only partially kidding.
Disgrace to our court system. And I had two other judges. And Gorin's an example. He refused to listen to the appellate division. Judge, it's a cabal going on, by the way. He refused. I won that case. That's the attorney general case. I won that case. And Gorin refused to honor the order of the appellate division, which is essentially his boss. He said, I guess in a crude way, I won't say it, but you know what he gave them. You understand that. He looked at him, he said, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to follow the orders. What does he care? He's retiring or something. He's a corrupt judge, another corrupt judge. And then the third judge, you know all about him, Kaplan. That was a disgraceful situation. So this is all New York. It's the people love me, but it's a Democrat deal going on to try and get this corrupt president, this president that's destroying our country. Look at the job numbers today. They were so much lower. Nobody ever thought a thing like this could happen so quickly. But they're trying to get this horrible president, the worst president in the history of our country. They're trying to get him elected with these three judges that I've had in New York, and it's a disgrace.
Oh, no, people think the floor has been opened for questions. And it's weird, because it's Trump, and he may actually, depends on the question, but please, he's on a roll.
And it's an absolute disgrace.
What's your plan for jobs?
Say it again.
What is your plan to improve jobs?
For jobs?
The job numbers.
What's my plan for jobs, you say?
Yes.
My plan for jobs is to drill, baby, drill, to bring energy down, to close up the border, to get rid of all the criminals that are being allowed into our country. You know, our country is being inundated with criminals from all over the world. The jail populations from all over the world are way down because they're driving them into America. They're dropping them off in the good old USA. And they're taking them out of mental institutions, and they're taking them out of jails from all over the world, not just South America.
You could almost say they're not sending us their best people.
And all of this is greatly affecting our country and very negatively. Now we're going to make America great again. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
won't stop me from testifying. The gag order is not to testify. The gag order stops me from talking about people and responding when they say things about me. We have people saying things about me, and I'm not allowed to respond. So this judge has taken away my constitutional right. And as the Republican candidate and somebody that's leading Biden by a lot, I should be able to respond, but this guy's got me with a gag order. Now, we're filing, I think today, a constitutional motion to get this out. We'll be filing a lawsuit on the constitutionality of it. But if somebody says something about me and I'm not allowed to respond, that's never happened before. Thank you.
All right, so there. That was, and holding court once again in the lobby before court actually goes into session. He made a reference to the question. It was actually a pretty good one, because some had said, "Does the gag order affect you if you testify on your own behalf?" And that's a no. Even the judge himself said that the gag order preventing him from commenting about witnesses and jurors does not bar him from anything he might say. Now, that could be fun. Then swear him in and let's go. I want to stress to Mr. Trump, you have an absolute right to testify at trial. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Judge Mershon. Thank you so very, very much. All right. So another exercise that we engage in, and that is whenever somebody who's on the VP list, and Trump's gathering a lot of people in Palm Beach on the VP list. And one of them is this gentleman, Byron Donalds, congressman of Florida. And he visited the campus of George Washington University, like a couple of miles from the White House. And one of the protesters threw a racial slur at him.
Well, first of all, it's good to be with you. What I saw was you had a large amount of vile people like that protest. There were many others. They were shouting a lot of hateful speech towards Jews. Some hurled it at me, but that's fine. I'll deal with that on my own. But at the end of the day, what you have in these encampments, like you've reported, are a lot of people who are not students at these universities. They are using these protests as a way to gin up more fear, more intimidation amongst Jewish students and other students at these campuses who just want to go to school. And so it's really important for these universities to step up and to protect the students and not allow these outside forces to take over their institutions.
President Biden had ignored the issue, hoping that it would go away until
Dana Perino
yesterday, when for some reason, possibly because he was watching morning television on another network, he decided to give a statement. Here's part of that from yesterday.
Yeah.
We are not an authoritarian nation where we silence people, neither are we a lawless country. We've all seen the images, and they put to the test two fundamental American principles. Excuse me. The first is the right to free speech and for people to peacefully assemble and make their voices heard. The second is the rule of law. Both must be upheld.
What was your reaction to the president's statement yesterday?
My reaction is the president is weak. The president is soft. His speech was mealy-mouthed because he doesn't want to offend these protesters, because he doesn't want to lose votes in Michigan and Minnesota. Let's call it exactly what it is. Free speech is protected, but what you cannot do is trespass. What you cannot do is intimidate. What you cannot do is violate the civil rights of other students in the process. That is exactly what's going on these universities. And because of his weak position and his weak stance, it's only going to encourage more of this, and it puts law enforcement and university officials on the line from trying to maintain order so all students can actually get the academic rigor that they went to these schools for, or they're going to devolve into more chaos.
This is why Congressman Byron Donalds of Florida is on some VP buzz lists, and why he is, and I'll wrap up here and tell you that this is my fearsome to Democrats anyway. DeSantis, Senator J.D. Vance, Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Byron Donalds. I don't know anybody else that I am really interested in on the VP list. Maybe somebody can wedge their way on there. I don't know. Maybe somebody can drop out if they, you know, discover they, you know, shot a puppy 10 years ago or something like that. So just you never can tell. Kristi Noem was never on my list. There is no great loss there. 950. So a couple of things happened in the Ashley McBride world since her first album. First, she dropped about 50 pounds. took some of the curl out of the hair, kept the tats, and rocks out a little more.
There's higher roads than I rode, and better choices than I chose. I'm just sticking with the devil I know.
She's just so very, very good. Whether it's the sort of the softness of a ballad from a few years ago or something with a little more crunch. The great Ashley McBride. So to take us out, there's Ashley, and here we are thanking you for listening. Producer Rhonda K. Moreland, there on the Twitter at Producer Rhonda K, R-O-N-D-A, capital K. Thank you, Mr. Matt, for the technical guru skills. Thank you, Nikki Whaley, for news excellence. Thank you in advance, Chad Hasty, for filling in Monday. What? Where am I going? I'll tell you Tuesday. Have a great weekend. Go Mavs. Go Stars. Go Rangers, obviously. We'd like that to go well, too. I'm getting greedy.
Hell, there's hell everywhere I go.
Have a great weekend.
With the devil I know.